Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. Don't live your life on hold with online car insurance that's driven to save you time and money.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
He is the brain behind some of the most beloved comedies of all time, author of tons of novels. He's also written musicals. And now he's bringing his new show, Authentic Stupidity, to the Olympia Theatre in Dublin on the 1st of November. Ben Elton, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver. Thank you for having me on your show.
Not at all. I hope we're not interrupting you. Are you normally writing? What would you be up to at this hour of the morning rather than talking to the likes of me?
Goodness gracious. I'm on the road. I did played my first show in Leeds last night. I've got two nights here in Leeds, which I'm very pleased about, sold out. And then I'll be off to, I think, Cardiff the day after. No, this is a long tour, 60 dates this autumn and then
wow,
another 40 after Christmas. So, no, you find me recovering from the triumph of last night's adoring audience.
100 shows. You are known as one of the industry's most indefatigables, but you did take a break, didn't you, from live performing for quite a gap?
Yeah, I did. It wasn't a deliberate thing. I did my first stand-up comedy gig in early 1981, so I've been doing it 44 years. But there was a 15-year gap, in fact. Wow. I did a tour in 2004, 2005 when my kids were very young. And, of course, you know, being a tour is a tour, and I was away effectively as much as 6 months if you take in Australia and New Zealand and Britain and the Republic and all of that. And I realised I'd missed a lot of my kids, you know, growing up. So I sort of thought, well, I won't do a tour in the next 2 or 3 years. And before I knew it, you know, the kids had grown up and 15 years had passed. And I think my wife wanted to get me out of the house. And she said, have you ever thought about doing any touring again? So I did one in 2019 and absolutely loved it. And realized that actually I prefer being a stand-up comic now to in my sort of, you know, in my pomp in the 80s and early 90s. Yeah. That's what I talk about quite a lot. I mean, I used to talk about what I know. Now I talk about what I don't understand. I'm basically a bewildered old man trying to catch up. I used to be at the cutting edge. Now I'm scuttling behind it, trying to make sense of what is a very confusing world. So I actually think comedy is more satisfying for me now than it was when I was young.
And when you hadn't performed for those 15 years, your first gig back on stage, where was that?
I did a series of warm-ups in Britain. I did 2 weeks of warm-ups, and then we opened the official tour in the Republic last time in Dublin. And so, yeah, it was right at the beginning of the tour, and that was great. It's very fresh and it's very new. But now I'm mid-tour for this new show, Authentic Stupidity.
Yes.
And so I'm very happy that, in a way, you know, seeing it at the first show is very fresh. But I think perhaps seeing it honed is a different experience. So, yeah, I'm bringing a very, very tight and honed show to the Olympia, and I know that audiences are enjoying it very much. In fact, I've never had such amazing reviews. Well, I used to get completely crap reviews, so it's not a high bar, but I must say it's been pretty wonderful, the reaction.
We'll come back to some of the crap reviews, maybe if we have time, but I was curious to know, when you said your kids were small, I think you moved to Australia because your wife, mother of your kids, is an Aussie. Were you a stay-at-home dad? Was that something you enjoyed?
Yeah. I mean, I'd written some novels before that period, but I really did just sort of kind of get into being a home, you know, I wrote at home. I wrote quite a lot of novels through the noughties and the early teens. And I also worked on We Will Rock You, my Queen musical, quite a bit. So I wasn't at home all the time. I'd go away for 3 weeks to rehearse a show in somewhere, a lot of shows in Germany. I did one in America. But I was mainly a stay-at-home dad. Well, yeah, me and Sophie, we shared the parenting. I do, you know, I do quite a lot of the cooking, actually. I'm quite good at sort of kind of, you know, sort of yummy. I do good pies and casseroles and Yorkshire puddings and things like that. I like, you know, I like kids. I cook what I like. And the kids, you know, like what I like. So, yeah, I do a lot of the cooking at home.
That sounds like you're trying to stop your kids becoming Australian. You're just keeping them on a British diet.
Well, you know, we've spent quite a lot of time in Oz, obviously, because their Aussie family is very important to them. But, yeah, I think they're very... But then the Aussies are very, you know, Britain and Australia are very close, as they are, as Ireland and Australia. I mean, clearly, we all, you know, we all know the history of Australian colonisation. And And so, yeah, you'll find there's plenty of pie eaters and sausage eaters in Australia. They don't need me to introduce them.
Too much departure. You don't usually give your stand-up shows a title, but you have this time.
I have indeed. Yeah, last time when I was at Liberty, it was just, you know, been out and back 2019. But I just thought it would be a funny thing to play with this whole artificial intelligence thing. I mean, really, the title Authentic Stupidity could be a title of any of the stand-up acts I've done over many, many years. I mean, I did a week in Dublin in 1987, which, you know, and you could have called that show Authentic Stupidity because that's what you do, I think, as a comic. You unpack, which is a word that young people use. The essential absurdity of the human condition, the madness of how we treat our world, how we treat ourselves, how we treat each other. How foolish we are as individuals. So often we're our own worst enemies. That's grist to the mill of comedy. And so all my tours are about authentic stupidity, particularly my own. I remain the principal target of my comedy, really, as I think I always have done, except when doing a little bit of politics, obviously. But I just called it, I gave it that actual title because, you know, we're all so, you know, this whole artificial intelligence thing is so terrifying. The idea that we might have actually created machinery that really could replace us. And I couldn't believe it, you know, when Elon Musk attended his Rishi Sunak's AI summit and said it as bald as brass. He said, you could all be out of work in 10 years. And I'm thinking, if a terrorist went on telly and said that, then we'd be sending in the SAS. And I think we should be sending in the SAS. I can't, if you want an example of human stupidity, it's allowing a bunch of unelected, unaccountable, tax-avoiding plutocrats, billionaires in California to develop technology, which they themselves admit is crazily unpredictably powerful and could render us obsolete. I think we're mad to let him get away with it. Sorry, I'm a bit of a Luddite.
Yes, you're reminding us, though, that you were always quite political, weren't you? And in the British political context, you were always a supporter of Labour, is that right?
Yes, I mean, not uncritically, but I'm certainly, I'm against the Tories. I mean, Labour sometimes, yes, I tell people where I vote, but that's not my act. I mean, I unpack that as well on stage. I mean, obviously, Tories are, you know, I've got friends who are Tories. I mean, you know, if they're starting to pivot towards Nigel Farage, then maybe we won't be having dinner anymore. But, you know, I think we're all, politics is part of all our lives because it's the jobs and services on which we depend and it's the environment which we have custody over. And so I think everybody should be interested in a little bit of politics. And of course, I use it to feed my work a bit. But most of my work's not about that. And in fact, most of this routine is actually about trying to catch up with social changes, like the new ideas in gender and identity, all of which are astonishing. I mean, nobody saw any of this coming. And now we're all negotiating it and finding a way through. And I deal with a lot of that. But basically, I'm there to deliver 2 hours of hilarious comedy. I think I've done it in the past and I'm prepared to promise I'll be doing it again.
Speaking of politics and identity in particular, you told recently this fascinating story about how basically you, your family owe your lives to the actions of a school in Wales.
Yeah, I mean, I've told it before. It's not that's part of a chain of. I think the survival of any refugee is all about the kindness of strangers and 1,000 moments. What I've read, I obviously take an interest in refugee politics because my father was a refugee.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. You know, no, I have refugee genes, as they say. My father arrived in Britain as a 15-year-old boy, terrified, escaping from the Nazis. He was with his immediate family. They got out. His parents and his brother, but the rest of many other people in my family didn't get out. Obviously, I didn't know them. This all happened many, many years ago. And yes, part of the chain of coincidence, good fortune, and astonishing kindness resulted. My grandfather had finally been granted a visa as an academic, a visiting academic via a charity, which allowed him and his wife to get into Britain. Because, of course, nobody was letting the Jews in at that point, just as at the moment, people don't want to let our current refugee crisis in.
Yeah.
So they couldn't bring their children. There were no visas for the children. And it was this school in Wales that offered places, i.e. bed and board, so they wouldn't be dependent on the state. And both my father and my uncle grew up to be professors and I think made a very full contribution to the society that
Absolutely,
welcomed them. I'll
yeah.
be forever grateful for Britain to have taken us in, but we were very much the lucky one. So my father is Jewish, but he's an atheist. I'm an atheist. I don't identify as Jewish. I'm half Jewish racially, whatever that means. I've no idea what race means. I think we're all two DNA chromosomes away from being Brussels sprouts, as far as I know. So that's how foolish racism is.
And along that extended family was Olivia Newton-John.
God, you've been doing some off-kilter research. Yes, Olivia Newton-John is my third cousin, which I am unashamed that I still fancy that there's something rotten like every other straight boy in the 70s. We both are descendants of a Nobel laureate nuclear physicist called Max Born. He's her great-grandfather and he's my great-grand-uncle. And it's an interesting bit of frippery, isn't it, that I am related to the lovely Olivia, who sadly is not with us anymore.
No.
But, oh my gosh, what a voice. You always knew it was Olivia when she sang.
I love that. My third cousin is hot and I'm not ashamed to say it.
Well, it's a distant relating. We're all third cousins to Elvis.
That's true. How are we? Great. I want to ask you, because you mentioned sometimes you've had some bad reviews, and it's a kind of a bewildering thing. We obviously consume a lot of British culture in Ireland, and we like certain British characters, but sometimes we are left bewildered as to why the Brits seem to just take a disliking to certain people who bring a lot of joy. And I'm looking here at an article. This is 2009, and it's the Daily Mail.
No, please don't read me.
It's only a headline because I was looking for some. After 25 years of moaning about Britain, comedian Ben Elton is off to Australia. So they seem to be merrily reporting your disappearance. What on earth was all that about?
I remember that. Well, that's actually slightly different than battery. I've had a lot of incoming from various sources from the right and the left. I do know that one. That was the Daily Mail, who decided that me marrying an Australian and spending some time as part of her Australian life somehow was, I mean, there's no dealing with the sort of hoops that right-wing journalists won't jump through to prove that anybody who testifies for the left
is
some kind of hypocrite. Yeah. The idea, you know, champagne soaps is such a ridiculous charge that just because you've done well, you're suddenly obliged to want to condemn children to poverty. I do not understand that the morally righteous way is for wealthy people to hate the poor. I don't understand it. I think the Brits, I actually think it's a deep historical problem. I mean, not everybody gets it. I got it because I was kind of uppity. You know, I mean, Harry used to say they think, you know, you look Jewish. I don't know. I mean, there is in Britain a kind of a sort of still a residual resentment of people who try and make it. People who I was always very clear. I really want to do. I think I've done good work. I want you to watch it. I always used to say, you know, me and Stephen Fry, very close friends. Yeah. And he has almost exactly the same derivation, lineage as I've got. I mean, from refugee stock, etc.
That's right.
But, you know, he's perfect at being English. He goes on a chat show and says, oh, I've written this book and it's nonsense. So you'll probably hate it. Oh, don't buy it. And that's what you're supposed to say. And I go on a chat show and go, oh, it's brilliant. It's wonderful. I'm really pleased with his new book. You're going to love it. Please buy it. And I don't know why. There's something in British culture, not British people, but the powers that be that find that difficult. But since I'm talking to Dublin, I can say I've got a tour and it's brilliant. Yes, come and see it. You're going to love every minute of it.
I think the same thing is directed at James Corden in the last few years, isn't it?
Because
he wants to be successful.
I don't know him, and I've known people who know him. He always seems like a really nice bloke, but I don't know. But yeah. There is, some people are allowed to get away with it and some people aren't. I was always not. Yeah. And I think he is.
Gavin and Stacey, which has brought great joy, just as you were part of the brains behind the Young Ones, the Blackadder series. You also wrote a series for Ardal O'Hanlon, didn't you, about 20 years ago or so?
I did, yeah. He was such a wonderful, God, I love working with Ardal. I did a thing called Blessed. It was a sort of precursor to, I don't know, Outnumbered or whatever. It did okay, but it was a bit... It was a bit too grim. It was about the grimness of bringing up children. Ardal O'Hanlon and Melga Deutsch, they were absolutely brilliant.
He was a radio producer, so yeah.
Sorry?
He was a radio producer, isn't he?
Yeah.
We can understand.
I don't know. Did Upstart Crow make it to... Did my Shakespeare sitcom make it to Ireland?
We would have seen it, via... It was BBC, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did a show about starring David Mitchell. That was my last sitcom, and I was very pleased. And it was very good. He says,
"Oh no!"
Well, Stephen would be saying, "Oh, it's absolute nonsense. You'll hate it." But I'm saying it's brilliant.
I also want to ask, because you were also involved, as you mentioned, We Will Rock You, which is a musical on Queen, and you worked on the Phantom sequel with Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yes, I did. You know, and that's, whoa, I worked with a Tory. What a hypocrite! I love musical theatre. I've always loved musical theatre. I played the Artful Dodger twice when I was a youngster. I mean, it's kind of cool to like musical theatre. Now, I mean, even you two have done a blooming musical. Spider-Man. You know, but I took the brunt for everybody by working with Queen and Lloyd and Andrew, both wonderful projects. I, obviously, Queen, you know, I loved so much as a child, and the chance to work with, and Brian came to see my show just the other night, actually, and Roger's coming in a couple of days.
Yeah, Brian May.
So that's a beautiful relationship. I mean, and same with Andrew. I mean, I love music, I love rock and pop, but I do love musical theatre. And always have done. I mean, I'm with Paul McCartney. He always loved it. And John Lennon always sneered at it. And suddenly he was the cool one because he didn't like something. I hate that about Britain, that we think it's cool to not like things rather than to like things. Yes. I'm kind of, you know, I'm a natural born enthusiast. I think that's why McCartney, we're on a segue here, but I think that's why he got so much crap, McCartney.
I love the segue. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
Well, you know, like McCartney, he got so much trouble, but it's because he's obviously a people pleaser. He likes to please. He's an enthusiast, whereas John, you know, everything's, you know, not really good enough. And, you know, and that's, look, the man's a genius. And of course, I worship John Lennon as I worship Paul McCartney. But I think it's funny that everybody somehow thinks that John Lennon was the cool one. I mean, just because he wasn't enthusiastic, if you see what I mean.
He was tortured in and of himself for his Paul McCartney. He's quite happy.
Just mean. Just mean a lot of the time, you know. I mean, you know, I don't want to slag him off. I mean, gosh, you know, his contribution to the sum of human happiness is so incalculable that, you know, I worship the ground he walks on. But I do, never mind about John Lennon, I do think Paul McCartney copped a lot of stick simply because he was an enthusiast.
Yes.
And for some reason, particularly the Brits, don't seem to like anybody who's enthusiastic.
Oh, I'm counting up the Daily Mail headlines as we go. Ben Elson slams the dead John Lennon and fancies his cousin.
Please, can we get off this right now?
Are you thinking about legacy yourself now?
No, I never, ever think about myself at all. The only time I ever get into a remotest form of self-analysis is when I'm doing an interview. I'm very instinctive. My life's an improvisation. I do what I feel like doing. I'm very lucky. I get paid for it. I don't have to do work because I need to, you know, feed my family or whatever. So that's a very privileged position. And I've been in it almost since I was a grown up. You know, I got a very lucky break early on by co-writing The Young Ones. And so I don't think about the past or the future. I don't look at my past work. I'm glad you remembered Blessed with Ardell, because I thought it was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
And so, no, I don't mind if nobody remembers me, and they won't. I mean, look, even Elvis is fading. Fame is really weirdly ephemeral. I mean, you know, people who you wouldn't have imagined, you know, I don't know how, you know, people like, I was actually talking to somebody the other day about how I got slapped. I was on a Michael Aspel chat show and I got slapped by Robin Day. Well, nobody under 40 will remember those names. Have you heard of those names?
Yes, Robert, I do. I'm of the vintage.
Those names were colossal. They were household names 20 years ago. Nobody's heard of them now. You know, and the same will be for me, you know. Maybe even
but
for you.
But thankfully you've got such a... Well, definitely for me. Thankfully, therapy is available. It's called Authentic Stupidity, and it's Ben Elton's show in the Olympia Theatre in Dublin on the 1st of November. Well, enjoy your 100 dates. And
I will, and I'll particularly look forward to coming to Dublin, because it's always a pleasure. I always have a nice time, and I always manage to get myself a few pints because it's such a pleasure over there. So thank you for this lovely interview.
Have fun.
I hope you'll come and see the show.
I absolutely will. Ben Elton, good luck to you.